nation. Chase it like a hidden taxation. Innovated interest rates to get the bank way to create money with the loans that they're giving out daily. That means our money's in debt, and we gotta pay back more than 100%. No wonder then why the middle class is going under when the ones above them gotta cover and come to collect. And many have no access to banking, making payments or saving, so more fees are taken. And every day the gatekeepers are trying to stop change. We cannot wait. Welcome to the blockchain.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Henry Rain Show here on WWPR 1490 AM. It's your weekly roundup of Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, blockchain news, and more. Well, what happened this week? Bitcoin's price saw its biggest drop for 7 weeks on Thursday. And coming up in the week ahead is Ethereum's Constantinople upgrade. It's going to be scheduled, and what should we expect with that? Also, different Ethereum. Ethereum Classic undergoes a 51% attack, and some of the biggest exchanges suffer. And in the second half of the show, we're going to be speaking with Brian Kornfeld. He is the co-founder and president of Synapse in Tampa. He's going to be talking about the 2019 Synapse Summit. That's January 23rd and 24th at Amalie Arena, coming up in just about a week. Well, we have some improvements technically here in the studio, but I'm not going to force it on the intro music for our studio panel. So let me just say, if you were listening to the previous show, which you should be, and that's, of course, Talking Markets with Mark and Andrew, you would be saying, that guy sounds a lot like Goldbug One. And you'd be right. He does sound much like him. Twin sons of different mothers, I believe, a.k.a. Andy. Hey, Andy, how you doing?
I'm doing good today, Henry. How you doing?
That's right. So were you listening to that guy? It sounds just like you on Talking Markets.
You know what? I'm the better-looking one. I just have to say that.
He sounds smarter, though.
Yeah, he does. He does. Yeah. He's a lot smarter.
And that's, that covers not just cryptocurrency markets, Forex, stocks,
metals.
All kinds of metals, et cetera. So you can get your fill of that right before. And I do want to say right now we're going to have a special one-hour Talking Markets show next Saturday that's going to run from 11:30 to 12:30. So the first half hour of this is going to be preempted, because Wild Bill is coming into the studio and possibly staying over for this. But we'll fill you in on that as we go on. And then also in the studio, returning after a few weeks' absence, is blockchain developer Stephen Lubka. Stephen, glad you could fight the traffic and make it through here.
Glad to be back. Yeah, it's snowbird season down here.
So. Unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah.
It took me 20 minutes to do a five-minute drive.
Okay, let me get a check, a sound check on you again.
Hey, how you doing?
There we go.
All right. The board's
working.
You never know what's going to happen around here.
Those Band-Aids help.
Yeah. Well, it's really scotch tape. Yeah. It's not quite as sanitary.
I see some duct tape on the backside here.
Yeah, so that, and don't even talk about the bubble gum. That's there for a purpose. Anyway, as I said, we'll be speaking with Brian Kornfeld at 12:45. He's the co-founder and president of Synapse. By the way, the summit, not the snummit, that's how you say it real fast. Synapse Summit,
yeah.
Snummit, is a two-day celebration of innovation that brings together innovators from all the industries. It's going to be our friends at Blockspaces. I think they have a whole wing up there of just blockchain startups, IoT stuff, artificial intelligence. There's defense contractors. Last year, I thought it was huge. Because you would walk into the main arena for some of the talks, and the, you know, Amalie Arena is a big place.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be pretty well filled up. But now, if I read the schedule correctly, there's so many breakout sessions, so many different topics and industries are going to be dealing with. They're all cutting edge technology. There's like about 12 breakout sessions an hour.
Oh, wow.
Of different things you can be doing. So the main center, the main stage, will be somewhat out of use during the day, but now all three levels of Amalie Arena is filled up with stuff for you to do there. So anyway, by the way, Stephen, anything? Has there been a 2018 since the last time you were here?
I think it has been. Yeah, it was last year. It's been a while.
So you're going to have to get closer. For some reason, that mic isn't very sensitive.
You can pull it towards you.
Yeah. It wasn't here since last year. Happy to be back.
Okay. And, all right. Well,
and this high tech.
Yeah.
Maybe we can get some upgrades at Synapsis.
Well, hold the back door open.
Yeah.
All right. Any new projects? No.
Me and the head of the Florida Blockchain Business Association, we're speaking last night. I'm going to start representing Sarasota just at the local level. I'll be the representative for the FBBA, and I'll be going to those meetings to just represent all the companies here in Sarasota.
So when's your next appearance?
I think January 28th.
At the Sarasota Legislative City?
Oh, yeah, that's got to be exciting. I'll bring the popcorn. I don't know if I can get enough beer in there.
Run that tube up from here.
Until Steve, that's why I'm going there, is to listen to Steve speak. I mean,
you get 3 minutes there?
Three whole minutes. So
yeah, I'll be on my second six pack.
Yeah, I've seen the agenda for that thing. You'll be the highlight, though.
You will be.
Catch you on that. A lot of things have been happening this week, of course. Andy has been perennial. Augie expects to be back in the studio next week, and we will look forward to that. He's still cleaning out that plumbing on his personal property, but I'm sure sooner or later
the pipes will be clean.
Yeah, it's got to be flowing like a Niagara Falls around there. Anyway. Bitcoin's price saw its biggest drop for 7 weeks on Thursday, weakening the prospects of a bullish breakout above 4,100. Let me just ask you, we'll do some on-air production here. So when I play the music through the board, your headset cuts out?
Yeah.
But yours doesn't, because you're plugged into the same jack.
That's right. I had the same issue at the last show.
Yeah.
I was just, you know.
Well, I only have a duplex jack.
Yeah, we need a triplex.
Anyway, we'll struggle through all this. Anyway, much as Bitcoin is, the world's largest cryptocurrency by market value at a 3.5-week low of $3,500 and change. Thursday, I believe it was, before closing at $3,627. The last time I looked before I came in the studio, I was about there, too. That's down 9.4% from its Wednesday range, and it was the biggest single-day drop since November 24th. Fourth biggest daily loss of the last 2 months, which, as you've been watching this for
it's
the last
like watching
year and a half,
dry.
You know,
it's
those aren't big numbers.
No.
But SeekingCryptos.com is where the hosts of the Talking Markets show print their wisdom.
Yes.
And what are you telling your folks there on Seeking Cryptos?
Well, bottoming develops over time. You know, very rarely do you get V-shaped bottoms like we saw with Bitcoin when it was in a bull rally, and that's normally when they happen. So whenever you have a pullback that's as major as this, the bottoming is a process. It takes time to develop. If you look at gold, it is going through a similar pattern where it went up, and it kind of looked like it was going to support, and then it fell apart again, and now it's pushing back up towards those highs. And that's what we expect here at Bitcoin to do. It's looking like it wants to break out here, but it's in a tough position as a form of a double bottom here on the minor dip, and then push back up to 4,100. That's what we're expecting. So I think we'll see 4,100.
So it sounds like it's range bound.
The beginning of these are often very range bound. It could go on for a couple months. We'll see, you know, just kind of jerking around, maybe even test down in the 3,200, 3,300 range, and then go back up. We really need it to make a new high. And until it makes a new high, you can't.
You mean a relative high,
so looking at 4,300, 4,400, somewhere in that range. But until it breaks out 4,500, the position that it's in is just not, you know, it's a risky position. Fall apart.
What about on the bottom end?
There is no bottom.
Well, but I mean,
there's a projection, and if it doesn't, there's a projection down there that we use, and I believe it's around 2,800. As long as it stays above that 2,800 range, I mean, you could see, you know, that's a very good area for a bearish, you know, for a bear trap, where it goes down there, shorts start piling in, think it's going to 2,000. But as long as it stays above that 2,800 level, I mean, you can still consider it a bottoming process.
Did it, on the most recent low,
yes,
Didn't it still stay above 3,000?
Yes, it was. It was slightly above 3,000. But there's we call it a double bottom variation. So, and we give it a little bit of lean. There's a projection that we use, and that it hits about at 2,800. So, at that projection, relative to the initial bullish swing, it can pull back to 2,800, and we still consider it a double bottom. So we call it a double bottom variation.
That sounds scary.
It's a technical term. It's just, you know, it's just
saying that
you got to give it a little leeway. What it's saying is there's a little leeway
right,
in there.
Yeah,
you don't go right to 38.
All,
you know.
Well and good, but if you're the average person out there and you see
a
number below 3,000,
and that's why it's a very good setup for a bear trap. You see that number, people pour into it, sell into it, thinking, oh, this is the end. And what we want to see, and this is just basics of order flow. And if you go back to Jesse Livermore or Wyckoff or any of them, they look for that order flow to come in at those levels. So if you start to see order flow pick up and they cannot push it back down through those levels, that's a good sign. That means that there's a lot of buying power there, and that's what you're looking for here. So if we see buying power coming in, if we see a lot of buyers step in, a lot of order flow coming in at these levels, then we'll look to go long. And it's hard to say because it's not like a typical market where you have, here's the volume. You got volume across all these different exchanges. And,
got
and
hidden
it's just,
volume.
Yeah, hidden volume and over-the-counter trades and peer to, you know, it's just.
We'll be looking at that because the big question is who is going to come in and buy? And the fact is you can't really see.
No.
But we'll discuss that if we get through some of these other stories before we talk to our guests at 12:45. Cautious optimism. That's how Hudson Jameson, developer relations for the Ethereum Foundation, described the mood in the run-up to Ethereum's fifth planned system-wide upgrade, Constantinople.
What? Say that again. Totally lost there.
Well, Ethereum's going to have an upgrade.
Okay, there we
go.
And
this one's called Constantinople.
All
it's
right.
All under the Metropolis umbrella.
No, wait a minute. Didn't the Metropolis of Constantinople, didn't that fail? In history, am I asking?
Well, most.
Yeah. Okay.
Most empires fail.
Okay, there we go. Okay.
Sooner or later.
Let's just hope this one doesn't.
Well, the WWPR empire?
Yeah. You know, it's like saying, okay, I'm going to name my upgrade after something that failed.
Well, what hasn't failed in history? You know, you could name it after the horse. That seemed really constant for a while.
Yeah, there you go.
Here we are with cars.
Now, you haven't lived out in California.
I would digress into the whole crusade here.
I was
going
to say, he hasn't lived in California. I lived out in California, and contrary to that belief, people still went up to the store on a horse. And they actually had a horse hitching post there at the Circle K so that people could come up and tie their horse up and go in there and get a snack. I kid you not. So,
amazing.
It's,
I just wanted to comment on what you were saying with volume and hidden volume. I actually had a... Some of the Bitcoin ATM companies actually had their best month was this December.
Oh,
record
really?
Record volume in buying Bitcoin. I was a little surprised to hear this, but it's definitely an interesting data point.
Yeah, it definitely is. And so once you start seeing that sentiment come back in, and this is a good point to have it. I mean, it's an extreme. It's really following. If you look at the gold, if you go back on the gold chart, going back to the '80s bubble in gold where it went up to 900. And then it fell all the way back down to like 225, which is a very similar pattern here. It was in a very similar pattern where it kind of went sideways, and then fell out and made a rounded bottom and then shot up to...
Speaking of Constantinople.
Okay, go back to Constantinople.
I thought I was going to digress, and I chose not to, but we digressed anyway. So I'm just going to tease what I was going to digress. And why during the Crusades... If it was to reclaim the Holy Land for the Christians, did they burn to the ground the largest Christian city in the Middle East? We'll take that up at another time.
Okay. I thought you had an answer for us.
Well, no, I do. I do have an answer for you. It has to do with gold, which I was thinking about what we just digressed on. I said, I would have teased him with that, and he would have waxed eloquently about gold. But
you know, I love gold.
Yes. That's the thought process that is going on here. Anyway, Constantinople, the one that we were talking about, was Ethereum's fifth planned system-wide upgrade. It's expected to activate next Wednesday, January 6th. Now, this is also interesting because in the backdrop we have the almost 100% almost 100% would be a doubling, but the almost doubling of the Ethereum price. Now, it's pulled back just a couple weeks ago, which usually when there is an upgrade coming, people start to get a little hesitant and shy about driving the price up.
You know, there was a song written about that, once bitten, twice shy. But in the crypto market, it's like 130 times bitten. Now they're finally getting shy. I mean, how many forks have ended in disaster?
Yeah, because we expect free money, but this one isn't a free money one. Anyway, Constantinople is a type of upgrade known as a hard fork, which we've all heard before if you're listening to this show. It needs to be unilaterally installed across all the nodes in the network to function as intended.
No, hold on. Because I'm going to ask Stephen this, because this is a question for Stephen.
Well, let me just get down to a couple more quotes, and then he can wrap it all up into one. So, Afri Shroden, who is the release manager of the Parity Ethereum client, anyway, all you have to know is he's supposed to be authoritative, said the risk of a chain split is low because all the nodes have to go on, otherwise we wind up like we did with Bitcoin Cash on the last fork when half the miners didn't want to do it and half the miners did on the upgrade, and we got that. So the risk of a chain split is low because the adoption of the upgrade by Ethereum's top mining pools, the parties most critical, have been strong. So in other words, again, comparing to the most recent Bitcoin Cash, where you had those two groups of mining pools that were in opposition, supposedly all the big boys and their girls are unified on this. Miners are prepared, he said. Only miners, and actually, I guess I'm being a little sexist that I just assumed the first name Afri is female, male rather. Miners are prepared, Shodan said. Only miners can split this chain. Also, Peter Sprecher, CEO of the top Ether mining pool, Ethermine, tracks the Constantinople adoption to 15.6%. So there, well, now we'll kick it over to Stephen. You know, the big mining pools are on board. We're unified. They're the ones that count. And the ones that have, I guess, announced only represent 15.6% of the mine. Is that like a big corporation where if you own 15% of the stock, you run the company?
No, so it's very different when we're dealing with miners and forks, and I would question that that 15% number. There's no reason this isn't a contentious hard fork, and so when we talk about contentious hard forks, it's what we saw the initial creation of Bitcoin Cash. Now, roll a year later, you know, the split off between Bitcoin Cash and Bitcoin Cash SV. These were hard forks that took place because there were two camps that were very opposed with approach. There's no reason for some sub-faction of Ethereum to oppose the Constantinople fork. It's essentially an upgrade, and it's shifting the difficulty bomb down the road, whereas basically if this wasn't done, mining profits would disappear. So this is quality of life upgrades and essentially allowing miners to continue mining. If they wouldn't adopt this hard fork, the difficulty would increase exponentially. And
well, on this one, the difficulty is decreasing, but you're only going to, for solving the mining problem, you're only going to get two Ethereums instead of three Ethereums that you would have got with the higher difficulty. So doesn't that make it less profitable for the miners?
I mean, there's going to be a decrease in the Ether mining reward, but the alternative is that the difficulty will ramp up so exponentially that the time between blocks will become greater and greater and greater at a very fast rate. So, I mean, maybe there's, you know, a decrease in the reward, but the other option is shooting himself in the foot.
So now, you mind if I ask a question out here? Is it my turn? Okay, it's my turn. Good. So there's two other forks coming out of this, and one is the Ethereum.
Not only your turn, it's appropriate.
Oh, okay. So the Ethereum Classic is one of the first forks that comes out. And now what is that a try to revise the original Ethereum Classic?
No. Okay, so Ethereum Classic is essentially, in the early days of Ethereum, you had two groups. And there was one of the most important decisions in the history of blockchain. And it was the DAO incident, which is where a large, very large project on Ethereum with a lot of money in it was hacked. And so you had one group of people that wanted to roll back the blockchain, to fork the blockchain, essentially to reverse the hack and give everyone their money back by changing and altering the blockchain.
Now, why is that possible?
Well, because if the entire network, or if, you know, everyone that enough people that they want to shift over to their own chain, you can do that if you can alter it if you have the consensus of everybody. But that for the same reason you're asking.
All
that
these
question.
Blocks have all these different transactions on them.
Yeah.
And at some time it was hacked and the Ethereum were sent to somebody else.
So they take it back to before that incident and start over.
Because everybody can view the block.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a rollback.
So now, what happens to those transactions that happened at the same time that big hack happened?
The legitimate ones.
So what you have happen is a lot of people had a real big problem with this. They said the whole point of a blockchain is it's immutable, it's unchangeable. We can't if we just allow even a group of people, a large consensus, to change the blockchain, it loses its validity. So those people, they kept going. They didn't fork and roll back. They kept mining the original Ethereum chain, and that is now today Ethereum Classic.
Okay.
Whereas the fork chain is Ethereum as we know it.
Okay. Now, but they have there's three forks coming up, and one's called Ethereum Classic Revival. What is it?
Let me back my information back up here. So Metropolis is the sort of the umbrella. There's three upgrades underneath the umbrella of Metropolis, of which Constantinople is one, and let's see. I don't know exactly what's going to happen on the next ones by this article, but...
Sure. So with the Metropolis upgrades to the Ethereum network, we essentially are looking at a series of improvements that are moving Ethereum not just towards its proof-of-stake variation, but towards state sharding, which is where... So Ethereum has a storage problem, even more so than it has a... transaction level or computation level problem, and that's because every node on the network has to store all of the data. And this isn't just transaction data like Bitcoin, this is smart contracts, this is computational data. The current size, if you were to run a node that stores the whole Ethereum blockchain, it's about a terabyte and increasing quickly. So this is a large amount of data. And so state sharding is a way that you make it so not every node has to store all the data. Groups of nodes, the blockchain is split up into shard groups, small groups of nodes, each of which stores parts of the data. And by doing this, you can greatly increase the storage capacity of the network. This is a technique that's being used by...
So you're delegating and distributing these transactions to certain nodes?
So you're delegating and distributing storage. So state sharding is the storage of the data, whereas sharding is the...
So is it stored on the block or off
the
block?
It's on the blockchain. It's just when you currently, say you were to access a smart contract that was processing data, it was actually doing something. That smart contract and that data, every single node, if there's 100,000 nodes on the Ethereum network, every single one of those has that data. Under state sharding and part of the larger umbrella of these upgrades, maybe 1,000 nodes out of 10,000 or out of 100,000 store that data, not all of them.
But the transactional information is on all the nodes?
I think that will also be split up, though it doesn't have to be. There's a developers have it on.
So it doesn't sound like it's everywhere.
So let me ask
a
question.
Currently it is.
Yeah, but I mean, after this, it doesn't sound like it would be everywhere.
Yeah, it'll most likely be.
And one more question before Andy goes. So we talked about the Ethereum Foundation up higher in the article. Is that who floats these suggestions?
Not necessarily. It's the larger development community, but of course, we can't not say that the Ethereum Foundation doesn't have a powerful influence.
All developers are equal, but some developers are more equal than others?
You got it.
Okay.
So I get my house. But a question. So let me get this, because a lot of people are confused by this, and you're.
Well, we talk about the 51% attack.
Yeah, 51% attack. So I'm putting it in the third grade manner here for myself. If I have a contract with Henry and there's a transaction in all that has something on the Ethereum blockchain, the transaction is just not on there. You're saying the entire contract, all the written contract is on there too.
Every piece of data that goes through the blockchain is stored on every single node on the network.
So I guess eventually you're going to have a storage issue regardless. I mean, that's going to be...
So here's the interesting thing with sharding.
Okay. Well, let me ask one more question to follow up on Andy's question. So if some of these tokens, the ERC 20 tokens are the smart contracts that are built on Ethereum. So all these other tokens are floating on top of Ethereum with all their transactional data, not just the smart contract. Okay. We're going to come up against our guest. If there's an important point you want to let the audience know, otherwise I want to move on to the 51% attack.
But I would just be explaining how sharding can avoid that, but we don't need to do that.
No, I'm interested in it. If that's okay. I want to hear how sharding.
Real quick. Okay. Very quickly.
You'll speak for the audience.
I'm trying to get a big grasp on this. I'm like,
okay.
You know.
Very quickly, if the blockchain is split up into groups, the blockchain scales in proportion to the number of nodes. If every node has to do it, it doesn't matter how many nodes you have, it doesn't get faster. But if each group is 1,000 and you have 100,000 nodes, compared to if each group is 1,000 and you have 200,000 nodes, you've doubled the scaling capacity, the storage capacity, and so by adding more nodes on in a sharding environment, you actually increase the capacity of the network, where current situations, because everything has to store everything, no matter how many people are running this network, it never gets any faster.
So, I mean, but there's still got to be a top, even with the sharding.
Yes, there is a theoretical top. I mean, there is a point where, due to other network constraints like bandwidth and transmitting transactions, you do reach it. It's not an end-all solution, but it is
So how are they going to resolve this in the future?
Other upgrades like the Plasma network, like state channels, and some of the other scaling proposals.
Or is a competitive system like Stellar or somebody else's?
No. They're all going to have to tackle the same problem. There's a storage and an upper constraint to almost every, you know, any sort of distributed system.
Stellar isn't proof of work, though.
No, it's not. It's
So does it have the same, have to carry as much?
Anything that has smart contracts.
Okay.
Has
let's move on to the Ethereum Classic, because that was really one of the big stories of the week. Ethereum Classic, the original unforked. Okay, so just go back. If you're listening to this on demand, go back and listen to everything we just said about how the original fork happened. The original unforked Ethereum blockchain suffered a 51% attack. That's Ethereum Classic, ETC, resulting in nearly $500,000 worth of double spends, according to Coinbase. That was just Coinbase. The original attack, the first origination point, I believe, was on Binance, from some of what I've read. But it spread around. Coinbase detected the deep chain reorganizations over the weekend. So reorganizations, is that another word for hack? Or does that mean
blocks?
Okay. I could have said that. Forcing the cryptocurrency to freeze all Ethereum Classic transactions on their trading platforms and other products. All right, so they just stopped everything right then. But outside the Coinbase ecosystem, things were still happening too. Rumors began circulating over the weekend regarding a potential chain reorganization, change in the blocks, Ethereum Classic blockchain. However, the official Twitter account for the cryptocurrency took to Twitter to refute the claims. So you think that was a little disingenuous of them, or do they really believe it? They would know, wouldn't they?
Yeah. I mean, there are, you know, they're involved in a debate on what that really was, though it's, you know, a changing of back blocks like that is, of course, you know, the biggest thing that's going to be is an attack.
Okay. Anyway, they said the ETC network appeared to be operating normally. Hours later, the account changed its tune and began requesting exchanges and mining pools allow for, quote, significantly higher confirmation time. The following morning, the Twitter account confirmed for etherchain.org confirmed a successful 51% attack with multiple block reorganizations. Following the events that transpired, Coinbase published an update, and going on after the initial detection, Coinbase to pause all ETC activity. Eight additional reorganizations, including the double spends, were discovered, totaling 88,500 Ethereum Classics.
That'd be worth $20.
Well, actually,
I mean,
446,000.
What purpose does Ethereum Classic even serve anymore?
We could get into that, but you know,
as a target for a 51% attack,
yeah.
So pretty good purpose.
You know, it has an interesting. You've had some big play. I mean, obviously, you've had Coinbase. You've had even Grayscale Investments have launched a fund for it. So there are definitely players in the ecosystem that think Ethereum Classic. Essentially, the difference is that Ethereum Classic uses the store of value properties of Bitcoin in combination with the, you know, what Ethereum can do. So,
okay.
You know,
we sort of took it for granted that everybody knows what the 51% attack is. We sort of touched on it earlier. But once 51% of the mining pool gets is controlled by one entity or, you know, agreeing entities. They can do whatever they want with the blockchain.
No. They can't just take your stuff, and they can't do whatever they want. They actually have very limited. So if you had coins on a hard wallet and there was a 51% attack, nothing is going to happen to your coins. What a 51% attack can do is they can take whatever coins they already control and spend them twice.
Ah, okay.
Now, that's an unlimited ticket to print money for yourself. You know, it's not nothing. But they cannot take your coins. They can't take my coins. They can't create
coins.
That's
a good point to make. That's a good point to make because that was my understanding of 51%, which was wrong, of 51% attack, is that they could take my coins out of my wallet.
Absolutely not.
Okay,
no.
So you're saying a 51% attack really just allows them to double spend the coin.
That's, yes.
But it does allow them to, like if the 49% are over here doing their transactions and then the 51% start doing their transactions, what are the 49% down the road? What is their block? Their
blocks are not being included in the main chain. So the 51% is producing all of the valid blocks in the main chain, whereas all the blocks being produced by 49% are essentially being discarded.
Oh. Ouch.
So that 49% is getting zero minus
it rewards. Doesn't, like, fork off the 49% then.
Well, that is a fork. There's on a technical level, it's not a hard fork, but there is a fork in the chain that goes on. So here's the main chain is proceeding along one by one, led by the 51%, and along each of those, there's the 49% trying a new block that never gets past one. So it's, here's one block, here's one block.
So you can't go back to that side of the...
Yeah. So now I know why we had a bunch of Ethereum Classic spenders on our coffee shop the other day.
One thing that I haven't seen, although I've seen a lot of articles about this, but this one was pretty disturbing if you haven't seen it. We talked about the different things going on with Bitcoin Cash. Bitcoin Cash price suffered after this because I guess the related controversy about who controls their mining pool. But I don't think people are aware of this one. Dash has a total of 1,900 terahashes per second. Okay. Meanwhile, NiceHash is responsible for more than 1,000 terahashes. Well, what does that mean? An analysis by a concerned Reddit founder that found that the three of the top addresses over the last few thousand Dash blocks, are controlled by the same entity. They write, this particular transaction has three of the four top addresses as inputs, meaning one entity controls all three. These three alone gather 53% or more. You can also see this started 6 months ago around September of last year, and I think the fourth unknown pool also belongs to this entity, yet it is separated on the blockchain. It started to gather a lot of hash at the same time. So if you have Dash, would you think you ought to be concerned about this?
Absolutely. This is a big concern. And Dash has an interesting, it's distant past. In the first few days of Dash operations, a handful of people, there was a huge mining reward right as it started. You know how mining rewards decrease over time. The people that had it in the very beginning when it was founded, millions and millions of dollars of this coin were mined by a handful of There's some major centralization concerns.
Okay. Well, I don't know if this is coincidental, but Dash has a foundation, too.
Yep.
That I know they all vote, the different nodes vote, and there's some kind of democracy / oligarchy that controls it.
Go back there, Henry. You were saying that more than 50... What is all this 3 and 4? Is that the biggest users, or is that...
3...
One person controls is mining over 50% of the coins.
Three addresses control 53%, and this writer believes that there's a fourth address that also is owned by the same entity that owns the other three.
Oh, okay.
And by address, that they know that that's where mining is happening, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
good thing you're here, Stephen.
Yeah.
We would have sorted this out between Andy and I.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that's all I know.
Dash is implementing something called chain locks. It's possible someone could try to perform the 51% attack before that happens. Chain locks are introducing a new feature in order to combat the attacks, it says. Do you know how that works?
I'm unfamiliar with it.
Okay. So evidently, some of the movers and shakers in Dash were concerned about a 51% attack. And so is this, because is this like where there's, like when you do a restore point on your computer, you can take a snapshot of everything that's on the chain?
That's what Ethereum did.
Okay.
So when you were asking about what happened with Ethereum and the DAO incident, that's exactly what they did. Okay. As far as this, I'm not sure what on Dash this is.
It says, chain locks also deals with block reorganizations and modifies the longest chain rules that Dash inherits from Bitcoin.
Well, I mean, they're talking, they have some method to deal with, so we're talking about these deep chain organizations. This is what happened on Ethereum Classic, and it's when an attacker basically goes back into the history of the blockchain and basically rewrites from a certain point forward, benefiting themselves. So apparently there's some tool to prevent that. When they're talking about the longest chain rule, it's essentially that whatever chain is the longest is the main chain, which is why those subsequent attempts, they basically get pruned off.
Good question for you there.
We only got 3 minutes to write a break.
All right. Monero. Is that you never hear anything bad about Monero. I mean, you got Pink Pony or whatever he is, and Fluffy Pony.
Fluffy Pony.
I mean, you never hear anything bad about Monero. I mean, is they a more consistent group of...
I mean, it's hard to answer that question. Perhaps you're right. I can't really recall any recent... Now, Monero has greater hashing power than Ethereum Classic. I mean, Ethereum Classic is a lot more vulnerable to a 51% attack.
Okay.
Monero is. Monero also has anti-ASIC properties, so those specialized miners that Bitmain does, ASICs, they don't work on Monero.
Oh, okay.
You have to use graphics cards. So there's inherently a little more decentralization.
Some of the things that we're not going to get a chance to really go into, there is a number of long dormant Bitcoin wallets are becoming active. They're controlling off a lot of Bitcoin. People are wondering, is this it's most likely that they're going to be selling their Bitcoin, but people are wondering if this has anything to do with the institutional investments that have been flowing into Bitcoin. Some people noticed that by the boom in the over-the-counter market, and another besides Genesis. Let's see, somebody else, another major over-the-counter trader, Cumberland, has talked about their increased volume. In the meantime, Coinbase has seemed to shift away from their institutional strategy. They had a very high-profile hire, Adam White, leave for ICE-backed.
Oh, okay.
The New York Stock Exchange parent company's new.
They need to
Bitcoin.
Change that name.
So I would be thinking, I'm just speculating here, we only got a minute to do it. Coinbase might see the handwriting on the wall with some of these big players like Goldman Sachs and the New York Stock Exchange, NASDAQ coming in. Maybe they just need to take their retail customer base and milk it for all they can, as we've seen them add more and more coins. The other thing is maybe these whales are opening up their wallets because they have institutional money that's on the sidelines that we may see an increase in price. I don't think they would be opening up to dump them if they haven't dumped them by now.
How would you like to be an investor in Coinbase, buying it for $20 billion or whatever you had?
Yeah.
That might be a big blow there.
So I believe that the backed launch date was January 19th, so that's coming up by the time we do the next show. So we'll find out about that.
They're going to have a hard time competing with a lot of these exchanges, NASDAQ. And what's the one that now the bankers got together, and they're actually going to surpass the New York Stock Exchange in that. They're actually putting together their own one for the stock market.
Well, we'll have to continue that. We've got someone waiting for us to call to bring them on. Brian Kornfeld from Synapse will be with us right after the break. You're listening to The Henry Rain Show. Open up the game. Let them get replayed.